I will talk today about magnetic fluctuation and accelerated particle in astrophysical shocks. It's a general topic, of course. So a few general words as an introduction. Of course, everybody knows what shocks are unavoidable in case of any fast energy release in astrophysical objects, or in case if you gravitationally accelerate some cold flow to collide with other stuff, and in this case we see some light from large-scale structure in the universe. But I will speak about more particular subjects, and we'll start with a few words about different scales of magnetic fluctuations which are involved in that process. And first, just a number of well-known points. What thickness of collisional shock is usually many orders of magnitude less than Coulomb free path. Everybody knows that. And strong magnetic fluctuations are observed in the interplanetary shocks. And here is one of the very many examples how the shock structure looks like. So it means what this is scale of so-called ion inertial length. And the thickness of the magnetic field transition region is it depends on the angle between magnetic field and shock normal, but typically it is not more than some 100 ion inertial lengths. Here is another example. This is interplanetary shock turbulence case. So it is famous shock, which was created by Bastille-Day solar flare. And it was a very nice observation. Here is a magnetic field in quiet solar wind. And that's numbers are about amplified magnetic field turbulence just behind the shock. This is quite a strong shock, and that's why it was measured so beautifully. It was done by Bannert and collaborators in 2004. But the main subject of that talk would be about scales which are much larger, in fact, than the thickness of collisional shock, what I mentioned before. And that kind of things, shock structure, can be simulated exactly in particle and cell simulation or hybrid code simulation. These two are quite powerful tools, theoretical tools, to simulate that structure. This is just one example of our simulation hybrid code, 3D hybrid code simulation of magnetic field, of the magnetic field structure behind the shock of the shock have inclination angle around 80 degrees. So it's actually quasi-perpendicular shock in normal notations. And you can easily see this scale is measured in, again, ion inertial length for typical parameters of density and so on. It is roughly 10 to the 9 centimeter. So you can easily see the structure of shock, and there are a lot of fluctuation in the surface and behind the shock. And if you will make cross section of the magnetic field structure, thank you, you will see something like that. So it's quite narrow transition because it's quasi perpendicular shock of 80 degree inclination, as I said before. And this is a parallel component.
So can you tell us what
It was, I think it was 150 or 200 cells in main direction, and roughly 20 cells in X and Y. So it's not full box, I mean not of the same size, just What do you mean? Cell? Yeah, a cell is roughly one. Yes. And this is how actually we also actually run some ions through the shock. And here is, for example, oxygen 7, and which was considered as extra component. So abundance of oxygen 7 was chosen like normal standard cosmic abundance. So it's not create a lot of difference in the shock structure, but it's important. And you can see how that particles are relaxing actually in the shock. So originally you still have multi-flux system, and then it's after all relaxed to more or less Maxwellian-like distribution. And this is cross about that things. You see here a number of fluxes, and here it's again more or less Maxwellian, not Maxwellian, of course, but Gaussian-like feature. This just illustrates how relaxation is going on in so short transition, like collisionless shock. This was hybrid code simulations. In the course of that violent collisionless shock relaxation, some amount, small amount actually, of particles may form a superthermal population to be further accelerated by shock to relativistic particles. And diffusive shock acceleration, which is one of the most important subject of my talk, is the most popular scenario to do the job. I mean, to accelerate particles to highly relativistic energies. That diffusive shock acceleration to be efficient actually require very strong magnetic field or strong magnetic field fluctuations. I mean, of amplitude at least close to what is mean magnetic field, but in fact it could be some orders of magnitude larger, it well might be. And that fluctuations should have scales much larger than the ion inertial length. Sorry, I forgot here the length. And it cannot be easily modeled by particle and cell or hybrid simulation for non-relativistic shocks, because I will speak.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, but in principle, this is not correct, right? Because nothing about efficient decrease of shock acceleration requires efficient scattering. That only means efficient scattering means everything goes faster, you can do everything in a smaller shock. But you can have extremely efficient acceleration, very efficient.
In case if you have very long system, and what exactly what I'm saying. Right. What I'm saying, efficient.
No. My point is that if you have an extreme, a large enough system, the efficiency is not dependent on the.
Yeah. No doubt about that. If you have infinite system, even infinitely small fluctuation could do that job, but we have no such.
This is critical for, like, when you put in these heavy elements, the fact that they scatter less efficiently means that they accelerate.
Right.
Well,
right.
There's a semantic problem here. I mean, we're using efficiency in a number of different senses in the semantic sense. Rather, there's a definition of
efficiency. Right. But for example, I believe what if you will have no strong fluctuation of magnetic fields, you will never see synchrotron X-ray in supernovas of velocities what we have. That's my point. I mean, but in principle, you're right. Of course, if you have cosmological filament with, you know, infinite megaparsec distance and small things, they could do a job. And actually, we are doing that things. So you're right in this sense. So this is estimation what was done by Don Andrei Vladimirov and myself. Simple things, just to illustrate how computationally expensive direct plasma simulations are. And it's clear what for non-relativistic shocks, it is actually very expensive, and it is difficult to achieve now the whole structure in particle and cell or in hybrid codes. So that is a conclusion. But of course, in relativistic shock, story is different, and John and Anatoly are doing very nice, and Zeka Off is doing a very nice simulation of relativistic shock. Sorry?
That depends on the dynamic range of the accelerator. I mean, in principle, if you just say you want to see the start of the acceleration, it's not a big...
No, I mean the whole structure with modification and so on. That's a point. This was... Right. But it looks at least here much simple case, not very easy, because here estimation assume what you have shock scale of that type. So if you are simulating on that scale, it's unfeasible for some foreseen future for sure. And nevertheless, what can we do with diffusive shock acceleration? Until we have not such a powerful computer or more clever ideas than just standard Bunneman-like or whatever particle and cell codes. There are, of course, well-known kinetic models starting from very early classical result by these people. And they are still very efficient in some simulations. And another approach, and but I will not speak too much about that, despite the fact what I will use a kinetic model to simulate electron distribution at some point. I will talk about later. But the main subject of my today presentation is just to say a number of words about Monte Carlo approach, which was actually originally suggested by Don, Dave, and Frank Jones, and Matthew. And I will report some quite recent result made in collaboration with Andrei Vladimirov and Don Ellison about how can we account for nonlinear effects of back reaction of turbulence, amplification, particle acceleration on the shock structure in the Monte Carlo kind of model for non-relativistic shocks. So Monte Carlo model requires some a number of prescriptions, some recipes. So first of all, it's particle scattering rate, so or diffusion model. The second important point is magnetic turbulence model, which is relevant to that. They are connected, of course. And magnetic turbulence model requires turbulent amplification and possible dissipation effect, and also some assumption about turbulent spectral transfer. Yeah, as for magnetic field amplification models, unfortunately, I have no time now to discuss that, but actually this is my interest, my closest interest to simulate magnetic field amplifications. But just mentioned a number of that, to be honest. Some original idea probably came to Ginzburg, who did it in 1965, but he not published exactly the results. But well-known review and papers by Wenzel, Kalsrud, Cesarski, and that guys. But recently, they consider resonant wave generation, assuming what particle stream generate waves of the wavelength equal, to some sense, to the gyra of accelerated particles. This what's why they call resonant models. But there are non-resonant models. Originally, I think the first non-resonant instability was discussed by Luke Dorphy and in some subsequent works done by different people. And they consider kind of cosmic pressure gradient instability, creating waves of wavelengths larger than gyros, for sure. And recently, a lot of attention attract point made by Tony Bell and some other people who found what, in fact, cosmic ray current is unstable in the sense what it can produce a fast short wavelength instability. Short wavelength means what wavelengths to be amplified by cosmic ray current instability are below the gyro radius of highest accelerated proton. And we also found some long wavelength cosmic ray current instability in different situation, and it was also considered by Peltier and Treville also. And another scenario for long wavelength instability was discussed by Misha Malkov, Pat Diamond, and actually some other people. Here, I will not again discuss details of that models, but for particular model of Monte Carlo we are discussing now, we use first prescription for turbulent spectral energy transfer in the shock. We consider two different models, two different scenarios. One is standard Kolmogorov type cascade of long wavelengths to shorter case. So if you, it means what if you generate your waves at the maximal scale, then they should be transferred down to the spectrum by Kolmogorov-like cascade ideas. But in fact, Kolmogorov type cascades are very nice for isotropic hydro fluid, but it is not yet proved at all what it should work in MHD case. And in principle, it could be, and it should be modified. It was many papers by Goldreich and Sridhar and many other Montgomery and Bill Matthews, and there are many of them. And so not to, and it's no final answer actually, but the basic result of that model, what cascade is at least slower or absent at all in the direction of the field. So we consider two extreme cases. One is Kolmogorov type, normal Kolmogorov cascade, and the second is no cascade along the mean field direction at all. So, so true should be probably in between. Sorry? Yes, inverse cascade is possible, but in this case of the same level, we should consider not only Bell instability, but instability is what I was mentioned before, but we not put it now. So it's the second step. Here is just Kolmogorov type cascade to short wavelengths. In principle, of course, and Misha and Pat were discussing that things more or less directly, that kind of effects, and even before it was. Right. So we should consider it carefully. Right. Sorry? Here, in this particular case, we use Bell instability. It means what it is on the scales below of the highest accelerated, of below of the gyro radius of the highest accelerated particles. In normal numbers, it depends on magnetic field, of course, but it could be something like 10 to the 16. Yeah, it is accounted as a model. That effect is easily accounted. That is the basic of the model. You will see it now.
Basically,
Right. Yeah, the, all of the defects are inside the model, so they are accounted for correctly. I mean, so it's, that's not a problem because we do know increment or growth rate of Bell instability depending on k, and in each scale we have balance between all of the effects what you mentioned. And also important point of that model, and what's why I like Monte Carlo kind of model, but because in this case we can do it in nonlinear way, so we can also account for back reaction that on particle distribution, and then effects what you are talking about. So that's I think. Who knows? No, we just using linear growth rates. We assume what it is saturated by Kolmogorov or other kind of things. Also, advection plays, you know, role. But in principle, you are right. What one should know how growth is saturating, right? But I would be happy if you will calculate that. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, but you know, we are doing what is possible. Yeah, of course, you right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we can input it, of course, in the model because model is flexible to that kind of thing. But at the moment, it is nonlinear in the sense what we. Yeah, particle of highest energies are mostly on the. No. The point is what highest gyrus particle are basically concentrated close to the escape boundary. I mean to that point. So you create the largest scale fluctuations there and fluctuation of smaller scales in between that point and the shock, and then they also deal with Kolmogorov scale, so it's non-trivial thing, let's say, so at least I cannot.
Yeah, I try to understand you. So the Bell instability, as all the other kind of instability that you mentioned, have a growth rate which is dominated by the particles by the momentum where most of the particles are, not where most of the energy is. No, for this one. For this one, the growth rate is. What? That's why I specified
right.
The two models that he mentioned. The growth rate is determined by the part in the spectrum where most of the particles are, not where most of the
right.
energy is.
Current.
So at T max, there will be a lot of energy, but very few particles. So there won't be much energy injected there anyway, in the form of wave, right? And then, in any case, in the case of Bell, it's non-resonant, as you said. Therefore, let me understand this point. So you're assuming that the waves are generated non-resonantly, but then they are absorbed resonantly by
right.
the lower energy
right.
particles.
Right.
And so the low energy particles scatter effectively.
Right.
But then the question is, what does determine the maximum energy?
Right. As for maximal energy.
Yeah. How do you bootstrap?
Yeah. As for maximal energy particles, I think what we to do that correctly, we must include effects of long wavelength. That's for sure. Here is just an attempt to simulate magnetic turbulence spectrum on a relatively short scale in this sense. We are not saying what we can answer the question about highest energy particles accelerated in this sense, in that model. That's for sure. Yeah. We have some Right. Yeah. And we did it actually, and we actually accelerate some high energy particles, but to be sure what you actually correctly explain the particle distribution at the highest energy, we must include also long wavelength stuff. That's no doubt about that. Yeah, right, but it's not yet, yeah, it is here, but we still need, I believe, what indeed to implement here some long wavelength stuff more properly. That's right. Yes, right. Right, and the advantage, as usually, advantage of Monte Carlo kind of things, because if you trust in that injection model, that is highly nonlinear. So it's quite a nice tool to see how nonlinear effects are working here.
Would this whole picture sort of close on itself only in the case in which we were really able to calculate a diffusive property of the diffusive properties of the particle? I mean, if we are saying that all these waves are excited non-resonantly, but then, for instance, we assume bomb diffusion.
No, we don't assume here bomb diffusion.
Okay, so I guess what you do is a self-generated diffusion coefficient.
Right. You will
but
see.
That's based on resonance.
Yeah. No. We use some. Yeah, I will show you. And so this is just how things are coupled to each other. It's standard things. What conservative laws is important for nonlinear model of the back reaction of the accelerated particles on the flow, amplified fields, as I said, it's also diffusion model, and we will return back to that point later. And here is a result of that simulation, one of the results. So you can see here solid curve is just the velocity of the flow in the case of we have no cascading, and dotted is if you have cascading, they are marginally similar, let's say. Magnetic field is already quite different. You can see what it's in case of no cascading, magnetic field is much larger here. Here is cosmic ray current, and this is temperature. So they are also sensitive to assumption about lack or Kolmogorov cascading. And what is more funny, what in Andrei's simulation, we found a big difference in magnetic fluctuation spectra. Solid again is no cascading case. There are a number of peaks in the downstream. And in case if you assume Kolmogorov cascading, it's smooth with no peaks. And it's roughly correspond to strong turbulence, which should result in bomb-like diffusion here. But in case of peaks, it is not. And that, because we have quite a large scale structures, that could be in principle observable with different effect I will talk a bit later. Here are the spectra, particle spectra in the same model. Again, they are somehow sensitive to the assumption about the presence or lack of cascading. And here is what you're asking for. It's a diffusion model. So it is constant diffusion at non-relativistic stuff. Then some peaks correspond to, with fast growth of mean free path with momentum correspond to P square law, because you have no resonant inhomogeneities between the peaks, and some at some points you have resonant, and they are here. Yes, we have some prescription for that. At lower energies, we assume what mean free path is equal to, it's easy to get from more or less quasi-linear theory, what you have saturation at low energies, at low momenta. And this is more or less equal to some mixing length or something like that. That is mixing length approximation, let's say. Then in resonant region, you have interactions here. And if you have waves only basically of the wavelengths below of your gyre, it's standard P square. It is general result, not required quasi-linear theory. It's easy to see.
What is determining the maximum?
Sorry?
What is determining the maximum momentum here?
Maximum momentum here determined by that, yes, mean free path.
Fixed size.
Right, and fixed size. Free escape boundary and diffusion model, right?
Right. So, yeah, I guess my question was, if you apply this with numbers which more or less are those of supernova, I would expect the Pmax to not grow too much because the diffusion coefficient is almost everywhere, like P squared, right?
So, not everywhere here.
I mean, if you put the velocity of whatever it is in a supernova remnant, and the size, which is roughly the size of a remnant, what Pmax would you get with this diffusion coefficient?
This one?
You're correct. When you're getting lower Pmax than what you expect from this
effect. For bomb diffusion, would be larger, of course. Yeah.
But what would it be?
Well,
yeah.
And with an amplified field of 100
Right. Anatoly, did you have
yeah.
This is all together. I mean, we have prescription. We have this is result, but we have prescription of the diffusion model. So it means what it is constant at some mixing length. What we calculate inside the simulation, and then it's more or less like quasi-linear diffusion coefficient. And but that diffusion coefficient we calculated. With our calculated turbulence spectrum. So that is.
Did you try testing your diffusion description by running a bunch of test particles through your turbulence and seeing how they diffuse?
Yeah.
And the description that you use actually corresponds.
Yeah, it's consistent with that, yeah, sure. Right. 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 Without cascading, because we have peaks only. Right. It depends on escape boundary. And the diffusion model, so it's sensitive to that things.
Which is, I would have naively expected that these peaks have some relation with, I don't know, some length scale of the problem, and
yeah,
I can't figure out.
Right.
Here, when you get by one.
right? Right. Harmonics, yeah, right.
The main one?
We have steering at some point, and then it's sort of harmonics of that. It's nonlinear.
Yeah.
In that model, we don't account for possible turbulent dissipation in the upstream. It may also be important in principle. So here it's another model with more simple turbulence spectra. But here we simulate potential rule of dissipation in the upstream. Parameter alpha is it parameterizes a fraction of work by cosmic ray pressure to be dissipated in the gas inside the in the upstream. So you see, of course, what if you have very low or zero dissipation, your temperature in the upstream would be much lower, and if you account for very strong turbulent dissipation, you can change it very seriously. I mean, so that should be that effect we should have in mind, despite the fact that it is not very easy to have realistic values for that. So it's just parameter in our model. And spectrum of particles is also sensitive to that, somehow sensitive to that assumption. Magnetic field is.
What are you assuming for the relation between momentum and energy of the turbulence? Because there is no standard would differ between the waves. If we are dealing with a plane wave, so we know which is the relation between the kinetic component.
Here it was something like for Alfvén waves for that case. This was not for Bell instability again. This is another model. In case of Bell instability, they are different. So it's indeed not Alfvén waves, and it is another question. We not address it here now. But here it was Alfvén kind of turbulence, but dissipating.
So in the previous case with the other waves...
It was not included in the previous case.
No energy and momentum.
Right. Of course, optical and UV absorption can, if successful, address many of the questions about dissipation in the upstream, because both emission and absorption spectra and light shapes can say you a lot of information about that. But what about synchrotron? Again, don't worry about efficient DSA, but I just repeat that point, especially for you, yeah. And under assumption what we are talking, what we are...
Fastest,
yeah. Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But suppose what we need to accelerate particle fast to multi-TeV region electrons, what we think emit synchrotron X-rays. How can we, what can we say about effect of that fluctuation on observed synchrotron images? That's a question we address with Yuro Varov and Don Ellison on how the stochastic field affects X-ray synchrotron emission, actually images and spectra. And the answer is seriously affect. Here is standard, what Rina yesterday, we were talking a lot about synchrotron emission, is just standard thing from classical works by Ginzburg and Sarovatsky. Everybody knows how synchrotron emission is working, but basic important point, I will just mention a few important points. It's so-called formation length, formation pattern. And from theory of synchrotron emission, it is well known what formation length is, length when your particle really emits synchrotron emission you observe, is very small. So it's type of gyro radius of very highly relativistic particle divided by its Lorentz factor. So it roughly gyro of MeV electron, despite what real energy of electron is multi-TeV. It's a well-known fact, but that's important for us. So it's roughly of that value. And we assume well, there is no fluctuation on the scale below of that. So we assume that all of our fluctuation have scales above of that. That assumption, and we think it's correct assumption, but I mean, not. Of course, it could be fluctuation of that level, but this should be quite low level. If it's true, then we can again apply standard synchrotron formula, considering a field as locally homogeneous on the scale above formation length. And in this case, we can use standard Ginzburg-Sarovatsky formulas for electric field and whatever. I will probably skip that for clarity. And what we actually simulate, we simulate Stokes parameters of synchrotron emission. So it's intensity and some parameters characterizing polarization of the emission. How, and that's again a story about emission. Let me, since time is getting short, immediately stress the result, what I'm like to say. What this is intensity, local intensity, local emissivity of synchrotron emission for a power law distribution. In fact, our distribution will be not power law, but this formula is very simple and it's very useful to illustrate. Suppose what you have power law like distribution of electrons or positrons, whatever. In this case, it's well known what synchrotron emissivity depends. Actually, yesterday, Irina discussing that kind of things. For me, the most important point, what if you are in a cutoff region, which is always the case for synchrotron X-rays, it means what your effective index alpha is quite large. Yeah? And that means what you can have very high dependence on B. So your local B in a large power could be much, could be very serious. I mean, we later simulate stochastic field. For example, you can consider simply the stochastic field as a superposition of any kind of magnetic waves, for example, Alfvén. It's not necessary to have Alfvén, but anyway. So, and if you will just simulate that field, you will definitely see what with some small probability, many waves coherently amplified each other, or just some, to have with small probability a large fluctuation of B. And given high power here, that even infrequent fluctuation can actually dominate a spectrum if you integrate over a line of sight for a system of finite size. That's a point. You will see how. Yeah. No, we will not. As I show, we will use normal Ginzburg-Sarovatsky formula, which is not required that things. That is very simple to understand how I was thought, why it is important. It is just, I mean, what in principle exponential cutoff can be represented as large, I mean, locally, if you fit, it would be a large power here. That's a point, just to illustrate. I not use that formula in the simulation, what you will see later. What kind of spectrum you mean?
The
Yes.
Large region of Kepler. So only in the small region.
You will see the result. Yeah, it just on the cutoff is most important effect. So, and this is what I said already. What, because of strong dependence of the emissivity on local B, a single or few strong enhancement could even dominate the N. And it means, in statistical sense, it means intermittency, actually. It means what magnetic field distribution high moments are important here. And that's come from the formula. So to conclude with that, we simulate images, so we simulate matrix of Stokes coefficient, just integrated local emissivity. So this is time retardation effect to have all of the photons which are, you know, came to the surface at the same time. So it's account for here. And this is electron distribution at some time before. Electron distribution was simulated with kinetic model. I have no time, unfortunately, to talk about that. It was published in 2000 with Roger Chevalier, Don Ellison, and Yuri Uvarov. And no.
Otherwise, things would be adjusted in such a way that you would get again.
You mean in interaction with local stuff? Yeah, in principle, you know, here in electron distribution model, we account for losses. But in the sense of formula, you are right. In principle, it assumes what synchrotron losses are not catastrophic on the scale of the fluctuation. In this sense, you're right, yeah. And this is a standard thing, how electron distribution looks like, because it's also include some synchrotron losses and highest energy, I mean, on the far away from the shock, you have very localized distribution of highest energy particles, and then you have a kind of power law. Standard thing. This is what was really input. I just rarefied that to show you things. And a model of stochastic magnetic field. We just simulate random magnetic field with given fluctuation spectra in four decade wave number band. So when I saying with given fluctuation spectra, we were using actually two, k to the minus one and k to the minus two as the different limit examples. And this is how it was done. So in principle, it's important to ensure what you have force Maxwell equations. And that is how we did it in fact. So we use some stochastic k, stochastic phase, and stochastic frequencies. And that field was simulated in a box of finite size with fluctuation spending four orders of magnitude in K. So now let's see how it looks like. So here is a simple case. Shock is just here. And this is some particular synchrotron image. You see some clear structures around, so it's localized close to the shock because it's X-rays and losses are important. And this picture is for 5 keV, and this is for 50 keV. You see what in high energy region, it is dominated by a number of bright dots, let's say. And in lower energy region, this is about effect of cutoff. You see? So in high energy region, you see. Here, k to the minus one. Most of result, what I will show for k to the minus one, and I will show on the end difference between k to the minus one and k to the Uh, It is no ambient field at all here.
Okay.
It's just a limiting case of strong turbulence. We can easily do it, but suppose what you have. I cannot justify that. I just simulate random field to see how it works. I mean, this is a question because we don't, you know, calculate that field with phase and so from Monte Carlo or peak. We cannot do that. It's just assumption. What suppose what you have random field filling a finite box with given statistical property and spectrum within 4 decades. We cannot do it much larger, unfortunately. Normal computer facility. Even if you have no coherent, intermittency will do the job. That's the point. If we will have coherent, we actually have some another models. It was not published, but we have models where we use coherent structures as in the very beginning in the model. But the point is what even without that initially coherent structures, you will have that. What do you mean?
I think the main effect in high peak is the fact that the signal of frequency depends on peak. So when you want to go to the point where only high peak giving you emission, this is where you see it.
You know, we are doing that things. This is just for single shot. So this is for particular time of moment. But we are making movie. So in this case, how can you do it analytically? You mean it's just realizations. But this is a difference between average and particular realization. What we are.
Right.
You're right. Yeah, it's. Yes. Yeah, that's possible. Downstream is here.
So why most of the highest energy emission comes from the upstream region?
No, it's not. I will show you in real projection. Here's just it depends on the magnetic field. The thickness of that thing depends on magnetic field and velocity, because advection is also important here. Here not. We don't. We can easily multiply it by factor 4. As I said, it's just a box, simulating box where you have random field. So in principle, of course, we can put here 4 times larger, whatever. Sorry, I should run actually to say. And this is a difference of images in different energy bands. We see what, for example, at half keV, it's no dot here. At 5 keV, it is, but a lot of such guys are around. At 20 keV, it's already quite pronounced. And 50 keV, it's dominated. Why it is so? It means what at half keV, dependence, it's not in cutoff region. In this case, you have a lot of guys on the field of view, and they smooth the whole structure. And at 50 keV, this guy, because of that large power, dominate. This is just to illustrate what I was saying. Yeah, it's magnetic field fluctuation, you know, some. And No, it's not singularity. You can have, in our model, you can have just Gaussian distribution PDF for probability to have fluctuation of level larger than something. If you have non-Gaussian, it would be much, you know, more serious. So a few words about light curve. We took that dot, let's say it's D1, and take light and create light curve of that things. And after all, so you see it's quite fast. And as a result, we can say what that light curve, this is for different energies. This is for 50 keV. At 50 keV, it is goes down at the time scales of a month in normal things. At 5 keV, which is here, this is the same but for different scale. This is only 5 keV. In 5 keV, it requires a year or something like that to disappear. And here, another important point about that. How that effect affect synchrotron emission spectra? I mentioned what there are a few particular things. This is a dot, bright dot. Here you see synchrotron spectrum of that dot. Region B is a filament just on the shock position. And solid line is so-called total average. What does it mean? Here you see it's surface emissivity. So it means emissivity of the guy divided by its square. So it is the characteristic. And let me show what I'm saying. This is a total field. So if we calculate emissivity from that box, it is called here total average. And that total average is here. And of course, bright guys are positioned above of that. But what is important? If you, at the same distribution function, put a standard homogeneous magnetic field of the same magnitude as root mean square from B square of fluctuating field, you will have that kind of things, which is always, almost always using for all kind of fittings. And you see in cutoff region, it is very serious difference. It could be orders of magnitude in high energies. So that's important point, in fact. And that just reflect what is in standard synchrotron theory, what was done long ago and what was applied to supernovas. People are always, when they are saying what we have turbulent field, they always say we have random direction. But here, amplitude fluctuation make a very serious difference. I mean, this curve is done for indeed random direction field of the same magnitude. And this fluctuation, you know, they also make difference in radio region, as Rina was interested. But in principle, in radio region, of course, they are not so serious. And in fact, in radio region, that guys could be even dimmer. So that fluctuation redistribute photons because the total emissivity is the same. We know it's easy to see. So that is basic conclusion what I already mentioned. And let me skip these guys. And this is sort of movie how it looks like, in fact. So you have typical time scale of a year, or it depends, of course, on the parameters of the system. But you see what that fluctuation are rising and. No, it's fixed by synchrotron losses. Yes, in our case, it's infinite system, but synchrotron losses cut at some point. No, it's fixed. Okay. It's fixed.
So on the particle distribution, it doesn't matter. You're saying that the field is doing okay.
In particle distribution, the only thing what is important is B square. So we put it into Coulomb, into synchrotron loss system. So when we calculate particle distribution, electron distribution, we just use normal kinetic equation, as always done for shock. Did it numerically with some injection, and include the synchrotron losses. Yeah. So you mean distribution is quite narrow, right? Yeah. No, right.
Yeah.
And this is about John's question, how it's sensitive to turbulent spectra. This is again for k to the minus 1. And in different energy region, this is 5 keV, this is 50 keV, I think, or 20, I don't remember exactly, but high energy. And this is how it looks like in k to the minus 2. In k to the minus 2, you see large structure, which is obvious, actually. And to conclude, actually, we did the same thing with 3D distribution. So we just can account for geometry in a simple way. And we did it for a quota of region, not to think about injection dependence of the and so on, so just local. So if you have constant injection, and Rina can criticize, of course, but anyway. And later, I mean, on the next talk, I will speak about polarization, because this effect is about polarization, in fact, but it's not time to speak about that now. And this is how it looks in Chandra image, sorry for E, of, it was late night yesterday. So this is how, it's a well-known picture, and actually Uchiyama and his collaborator did it and published it in Nature. And the important point was they indeed see some clumps there with lifetime of that. In this case, we not need to say about, and it's also the same guys likely seen in Cassay, where we see synchrotron filaments, which just represent a shock in itself. Also clumps and dots, it was done by, again, Uchiyama and then with Rob Fissin. And they could be relevant to, so we, analyzing that statistics, we can draw some very important conclusion about turbulence and particle acceleration. That's all for the moment. You can stop me when you find your...
Yeah, yeah, one more. No, with this picture where they move, yeah, this one. So what happens? Can you translate the sizes into a user-friendly form from one second?
If you know the distance, this is RxJ1713. If a distance about a kiloparsec, which is typically people assume, that would be some maybe 3-5 times 10 to the 17, or, I mean, it's a fraction of parsec.
Fraction of parsec, and the total right. Width of the emitting region is also a fraction of parsec. So they are comparable to the width of the...
No. It's much larger. It's minutes. Yeah, it's small box here. You see, this is box.
Oh, this is the box.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, within factor of 10 or 15, everything is comparable, I think. Yeah, and in this case, you will kill Chandra, you know, because you will see what Chandra and XMM are comparable in this.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's the point. Yeah. Or Chandra has a very nice resolution, I would actually say. No, I mean, interpretation of the authors of that paper is not about the clump. They were saying what this time scale a year is equal to lifetime of relevant energy electrons in magnetic field. And they draw from that milligauss magnetic field, which was criticized by some guys, whatever. In our case, it's not necessarily, you mean, we have nothing to do. In our case, as Pascal already asked, we have steady distribution of electrons, and it has nothing to do with, temporal behavior of highest energy particles.
Because correct with some statement saying to the losses. Suppose you ignore them to some losses and you see that, and you say that this is just moving things. Do you get reasonable velocities just dividing this 5 years for the second?
The point is, what in a linear region without strong dependence on, without intermittency, you can simply say what you can divide your scale size by velocity and to make equal. But, right, yes, but but in this case you cannot avoid that kind of thing. But in cutoff region, when you have intermittency, that is different. It's well known in probability theory, you know. Yeah. In this case, you must have much larger, I mean, so in this case, suppose what you have alphanic kind of velocity, yeah, or something like that. It should be. Yeah. If it is motion, it is difficult to accommodate because that phase velocity must be close or even larger than shock velocity, which is, you know. But in this case, no. For me, it's difficult to understand how can you make.
No.
Of yes. Yeah. In this sense, yeah.
There may be, in general, not just in one case, the difference that in the case of big fluctuation, you should have less persistency of the features, and probably you should get the apparent velocity points in all directions.
Right.
In the case of the pre-existing.
Right. Right. Some moving, yeah. Right.
And by the way, according to your model, if you try to model this case, it depends also on what is, where it is at all in this case, what kind of percent delta view will be you require to account for this?
We can say about B square, I mean, mean B square, or root mean from B square, we must have something like close 10 to the minus 4. Fluctuation are always very large. I mean, delta B over B is not a matter here. What matters here is just and that value is within factor of 2, something like 10 to the minus 4 in our model to fit all of this stuff. And that's an important point. I mean, sorry? And the point is what people have some, for example, in XPEC, you have SR-CAT model or some similar models. And people are using that, widely using that codes to estimate your magnetic field from cutoff position. And you must be very careful about that because if your field is turbulent, it's not true to use that standard formula. In case if it's turbulent, of course, if you are sure what it is a mean field, you can continue that. Okay. It depends on spectrum shape. If we have k to the minus 1, it's close to minimal scale. If we have k to the minus 2, it's close to maximal scale. If you have something in between, yeah. You mean simulated or observational?
Yeah, here. So this size is okay, and part of 10 less than the size of the wall. So does it mean that if you would interpret this as a fluctuation of the magnetic field, that the super spectrum is extremely
Not necessarily, because this is quite extreme fluctuation, and if you will look into PDF, it's a matter not just of the spectral, but of the PDF and your resolution. And yeah, it resolved. No. It resolved, of course, but you know there are some games you can do with DS9. You can use different scalings. Yeah, you can show something is very pronounced, but it could be actually marginal. I'm not saying what it is not real. I'm saying it's real, but you should not consider that as extremely large fluctuation. Okay.